They were like, we never really thought we would have to say this to a group of people.
Now they say it to everyone.
But there was this one crew that came through. And they ruined it for everybody.
Yep.
What's up, y'all? I'm Zach.
And I'm Steve, and this is Fireside Swift.
Steven, my man, what's going on?
Not much, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well now that, you know, we can record and actually publish our podcast.
Yeah, that kind of sucked this week.
That was not fun.
No. yeah, especially because, like, we spent a lot of time recording and editing of this podcast that it was really disappointing what happened. And so, Zach, do you want to, like, kind of let the audience know basically what happened?
Sure. So we record on a platform called Cast, and they lost, I don't know if it was connectivity or something happened with their host to where they couldn't connect to their host and download or upload their files, correct?
Yeah, that seems about right. And it manifested when I was, like, trying to download audio files. In fact, you know, this has been happening a little bit more. Like those of us in the podcasting communities, we would talk to each other and be like, are you having issues with Cast and whatnot? And so, like, we record on Cast, and then we would try to download the audio recordings to be able to edit. And, like, it was getting harder and harder. Like, sometimes it would fail. But, you know, I was able to, you know, keep trying, and I was able to get our recordings. I was able to edit all our recordings, and I use GarageBand mainly to do that. And then from there, I tried to upload the episode onto Cast, and it would just fail, like, nonstop.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Thank you for your persistence in getting it up, because it was – the worst part about it was, you know, Cast was trying to – I really do believe that they were trying to communicate as best they could, and they were just having issues with their host. But all their communications from Wednesday till Saturday were, you know, ETA unknown. Still trying to get that ETA. And so we couldn't communicate to our listeners, you know, we're out now, but we hope to be back up by X.
Yeah, and when it first went down, we actually were done editing the podcast early. We tried to release. I think our scheduled release date is now on Wednesdays or Thursdays.
Well, Wednesday, like midnight. Time. Okay, late Wednesday your time, which is Thursday for all the people in the civilized world.
So that's my target date to get it out to all of you. And so when all this started going down, we had, you know, over 24 hours that you know, it's still, you know, before that deadline.
Right, we had leeway.
Yeah, and so I wasn't thinking too much of it, but gosh, it was down from like early Tuesday all the way to Saturday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Saturday late. Yeah.
Late Saturday. So very, very sorry that that happened. And I know somewhere in there, some people weren't even able to download the episodes.
Correct.
That we had already done.
Correct. Well, because Cast couldn't reach their host, so there's no way for them to get that data.
So I know that's frustrating for you all. It was frustrating for us. We're sorry. We're looking at potential alternatives.
Right, because this has been happening more and more. We've actually lucked out the past couple of times this has happened. Our podcasting brother, Stephen Sherry, over at the Learn Swift podcast, he uses the same platform, and he's been hit two times now with the same kind of issue where he wasn't able to download his audio file to edit it.
Yep, and I know Garrick on SwiftCoders uses Cast for recording. He doesn't use it for his hosting, but he does use Cast for recording because it does make it easy for us to connect with people that are in different states or different locations. And I know it's hit him a couple times too. So
correct. So we just wanted to let you know what was going on and apologize for the insane delay. As it is, so I downloaded the episode today on my phone, and we are recording tonight. So there's, that's about it.
Well, yeah, it literally got released yesterday, and we're recording. So we're recording on Sunday. Released it on Saturday, like the last episode on Saturday. So it does feel a little weird.
It does. It feels very weird. I woke up this morning to tweets about last week's episode.
Yeah.
Without knowing that that episode had been released.
Yeah. That's hilarious to me.
I was like, how did these people know?
Yeah.
I wanted to imagine that Steve was out there like on a bike pedaling around with like a flash drive.
I was just yelling out, like acting it out.
Oh, so you memorized? Yeah. You memorized the entire thing.
I mean, I was reading off of a script, but okay.
Were there costume changes?
Yeah, there were costume changes.
Okay, then it counts. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, we really apologize for that. We're a brand new podcast, pretty much still starting out, and it's not a good thing for us to go through at this point in our podcasting lifetime.
But we appreciate all of you who are grinning and bearing through all of this with us. We appreciate your support, and and hopefully in the future we'll be able to find a solution that doesn't cause this. Maybe even self-hosting or something like that. See.
Yep, the jury's still out. So
yeah,
and you know, it's not going to stop us from recording episode 10 extravaganza.
Yeah, I was going to say, guess which episode this is, and you kind of already said that. Yes, today is episode 10, which
digits.
We're finally in double digits. I don't know why we put so much emphasis or specialness to to multiples of 10. I mean, we could be like an octo, you know.
We should just go off base 8.
Yeah, it's like base eight. Yeah. Yep. So what's that called? It's like we got. Binary. So what's decenary?
Sure.
What's base 10? What do you call that?
I call it base 10.
Like all right, base 10. So yeah, base 8. We could do hex. We could do 16.
We could do hex. Yeah. That would speed us along a little bit.
That actually would be really funny. That'd be really funny.
That'd be really funny to a few select people.
Yeah.
Most people would be like, where are the other episodes?
Because this episode...
You go 0 to 5. Yeah, or this
episode,
1 to 5.
This episode would be... So we were episode 9 last time. We would be episode A.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
The next one would be B. Let's see.
Yeah. That's one of those things that would only be funny to us. And people would just stop listening.
I kind of want to do this now.
Oh, no. Please
don't. All right.
Are we already digressing before we even get to feedback?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah. We do have feedback this episode, and it's based on... Oh, geez. Which episode was this that we had? We were talking about observers, so Notification Center.
Yes.
Do you remember? Yes. The episode, yes.
I observed some notification centers.
Okay, so one of the episodes, I literally don't remember which episode it was. I should probably do more research, but you know me. Stephen Templeman informed me that you can use ViewDidLoad for registering your observers and DNet. I don't know what DNet is, DInit, so the opposite of initialize, in your view controller to actually remove your observers.
Okay. So, was that the closure episode?
Could be. Possibly. I don't remember. That makes sense. I think we were talking about notifications.
I think it was our closure episode, because that was my example. I was blowing things up in my closure.
Yeah, and at one point in time, I do remember saying that I use view will appear and view will view did disappear to register and unregister observers. Apparently, you could do it in view did load and dnit if you'd like.
Okay.
It's up to
cool
you.
To know.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Stephen, for that feedback. That's the fourth Stephen I think I know now. Piling up. Yeah. So I have a question for you.
I have an answer for you.
Are you like me in that you do not write perfect code?
Write perfect code.
You write perfect code all the
time? Every
time. All the time? Okay.
Every time.
Okay. All right. Well, then you may not be a whole lot of help with this episode.
Yeah, good talk.
Yeah. I guess I'll be the only one to talk about debugging.
No, I definitely do not write perfect code.
Right. No. I don't think there's anyone... I know that writes perfect code. Even some of like the best and brightest developers I know do not write perfect code. There are many ways to screw up your programs as you're writing them.
I will say there have been a few times when I'm like, I set out to write, like, let's say it's one function.
Yes.
And I write it correctly the first time, and it's, I'm amazed.
Right, it's surprising.
Just absolutely amazed, yeah.
I know, and that's one of those things that took me a little while to understand. Like, I'll write the function, and then I'll run it, and I expect things to break. When I started out, I was expecting everything to work, and it was discouraging. Now I expect things to break, and I okay, this is my starting point. I'll run it, see where it broke, and then fix it to get it to where I want it to be. It's basically test-driven development.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I would say the opposite of test-driven development, but
it's test-driven development without the tests.
Exactly. Like, that's something I want to start talking about with debugging, because I've done some TDD in the past.
Right, it's bug-driven development.
There you go. Now, that's exactly what it is, bug-driven development.
Right, so tonight we're going to chat about debugging and what to do when things go wrong.
Yeah, and just like... you know, what are best practices? Or actually, I don't know if
I was about to say what are best practices. I think
I think we're just going to talk about like what we do and start a conversation maybe on Twitter about like what do you do to debug, because there's a million different ways to do it. And
right, and I believe the bottom line is if it works for you, then it's the right way to do it. Right, barring some corner cases. Where you just clutter up your code with a bunch of print statements, possibly.
Yeah.
If it works for you, then stick with it and get your code working.
Yeah. And by works for you, we mean actually like writing good code that covers all cases.
Yes.
Or at least, you know, most cases. Because there's some things that work for some people working for them by not actually succeeding in what they're doing, but they don't care as much.
Well, right. They develop with their head in the sand.
Yeah. That's not good.
No.
So if you think that's working for you, but it's not working for your clients, that's not good enough.
Exactly.
So obviously if it works for your clients, then you're doing something right.
Correct.
And so let's talk about those forms of debugging if we can.
I agree. So, What is debugging to you? Like, how do you define it in your own head?
Oh, gosh.
Or is it just kind of an abstract concept that you grasp innately?
Yeah, so, like, there's bugs, and then there's misbehaviors.
Okay.
And so, bugs are pretty obvious. The app crashes, or... something obviously goes wrong. Let's say crashes are usually, or like, crashes, non-compile, like, you know, not being able to compile. Those would be bugs, right?
Yes.
You know, things that, maybe not necessarily bugs, but those are the obvious ones to catch.
Right.
But misbehaviors are really, really hard, because a misbehavior is something that, it works, it's technically doing what you told it to do, and it's not crashing, and the app is still doing what it's doing, but it's not what you intended it to do.
So you're not seeing the results you want to see while the app is still functioning.
Yeah, and so think about...
Interesting, because I guess I don't break it down to that level of granularity. I would just call that a bug.
Yeah, I guess technically that is a bug. I'm trying to think. There's probably a better word for the obvious ones, like compilation errors and things that cause the app to crash. And even crashing bugs can be really, really hard to find and can be misbehaviors. I know in one of my production apps, when I was working on it, there were some cases where I would explicitly unwrap optionals. Because if that variable was not, or if that variable was nil at that point, that means I did something terribly wrong before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know as quick as possible that something's wrong. So I want the app to crash.
Right.
The problem that was happening was that in all my testing, it wasn't crashing. But once it got out into the real world, based on data that was coming back from the server and all sorts of other things going on, certain clients got the app at a condition where those variables were becoming nil. And obviously, because I was explicitly unwrapping them, the app was crashing.
Correct.
So that would be a misbehavior in the form of a crash.
Okay.
How would I even catch that? How would I even know that?
Right. And that's the other thing. Is a lot of, well, not a lot, but there are definite cases where bugs will crop up in production that are either extremely hard to test or just untestable in the development environment. Yeah. Due to, you know, a multitude of factors.
And so this is where, like, analytics packages come in. So with the company that I work for, we use Fabric, which is Crashlytics. Have you heard of Crashlytics, Zach?
I have.
Okay, so Crashlytics is an insanely popular analytics package that you can add to your iOS apps. You could add it to Android apps as well. And if the app crashes, you get a report and a stack trace. And so we'll talk probably a little bit more stack about stack traces.
I want to chat with you about stack traces.
Yeah. Let's come back to it. So let's remember stack traces, come back to them.
Yeah.
So it'll tell you it crashed, the time it crashed, potentially who it crashed, you know, which client it crashed on. So you could actually pass a username to yourself so you actually know who it was. So you can basically inform them if you need to.
Yes.
You know, that we fixed the problem, download the update. Let's see. So Crashlytics is one. Another one we use is something called Segment.
Okay.
So Segment is an analytics package that you can track events that happen within the app. And mainly what I use that for is misbehaviors. So errors that occur within the app that are not crashes, but are bad.
Okay.
Say that.
Right.
So we have a sync system within our app that we're downloading things and then we're also uploading things, but it won't download things unless we've uploaded everything we need to upload, so we make sure that the server is on the same page as the app.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything goes wrong while we're uploading, it could potentially stall the whole sync system.
Right.
I need to know about these things because I need to know if my clients are getting blocked because of something I did. And I need to get an update out as quick as possible. So I use Segment to track these events to give me the information I need to be able to fix these bugs, at least and also to identify that they're occurring.
Right. So that's how you know that a bug exists.
Yep.
Okay. And so the next step is to actually take a look at those conditions and fix the problem.
Yes.
So I guess the first part of debugging is finding the bug.
Yep.
And then the second.
Yeah, we just talked about that.
Right. Finding and the bug. Then the second part would be fixing the bug.
Yeah. What do you do now?
Exactly. And you use the information you gathered in the first step to inform how you go about the second step.
Yeah. So now I think we could talk about stack traces.
Yes.
So Zach, do you want to take a stab at that? What a stack trace is?
Stack traces are about 400 lines of code that no one ever wants to read outside of the first two. So when your app crashes, you'll see in your console window just a ton of strings printed out, and going through them is really difficult. It's basically a list of everything that was happening at the moment that your app crashed, all of the calls that were being made, and the cascade, I guess, of events that happened to cause the app to fail.
Yeah, and it also all the different threads, like it'll tell you what every thread is doing when the app crashed. So not just the one that crashed the whole app, but you know, it'll tell you that, and then this thread was doing this thing.
Right. But, and I think that how many people do you think that's good information for?
Oh yeah, I would say very, very few.
Okay, so I'm not alone in looking at that and thinking you're burying the actual information I need to have and all of this other inane stuff. And granted, the information I usually need is at the top.
Yeah.
But there still could be some, like, just seeing all of that there makes you kind of shy away from it, right? It's intimidating.
Yeah, and...
At least when you first see it.
I want to say that this is something that I probably somebody could show me how to do this better. I could probably read books to understand this better. But on the other hand, I've seen this done better in other languages.
I was going to say the exact same thing. This is one of the places where I think Java is better than Swift is their stack traces. And that's, I understand that's probably due to the maturity of Java and the fact that it's so error prone anyway.
But this was the same thing for Objective-C, and Objective-C is as old, if not older, than Java. I don't know which one's actually outdated.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Objective-C, it looked the same way. And so, and it could be Xcode, it could be the tools problem. I don't know. Right. There's blame to go around everywhere.
Sure. I know that in Java, it will give me down to the name of the method and the line it occurred. And
the line number, yeah.
That's the best.
Well, okay, so I know Swift stack traces will do the same thing because in Crashlytics, it will highlight the line number and the class that it's in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it actually exists somewhere in that stack trace.
But you have to...
You have to translate it.
Oh, see.
And I feel like that's the problem.
Yeah, shouldn't Xcode be able to do that itself?
Right? Like in Android Studio and Java, when something crashes, it tells me the line number and the class that it crashed in, and it creates that as a link that I can click on, and it takes me directly to that line.
Yes.
Why can't we have that in Xcode and Swift? I don't get it.
Now, up until this week, so I learned something, and we'll probably get into it a little bit later when we talk about breakpoints. So what we're talking about was really frustrating to me until I learned about exception breakpoints, and that kind of does what we want to do it, what we're talking about, but we can get into that later.
To a degree.
To a degree.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely talk about that in a little bit because I think we're going to spend a whole section on breakpoints.
Yes.
So like that's something that frustrates me a little bit.
Oh, it frustrates me so much because being able to see where I need to be and what the problem is, and sometimes it'll even tell me exactly, this is why I failed to do what I needed to do.
Yeah.
Null pointer exception on line 20 or 247 of this class. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That exists.
All of the information I need to have.
Yeah.
Right? In two lines of text.
I've read enough stack traces that I can kind of figure out what's going on just by reading them now. But more often than not, I will end up Googling. Like I'll copy and paste, the whatever the thing is into Google and see if there's a Stack Overflow on it or something. Because to me, they're almost unreadable.
I agree.
So what can we do about this? Like, I get one of these stack traces. I can't understand it. I go to Stack Overflow. I can't figure it out. Maybe from the stack trace, I can kind of figure out where it's occurring, or I can make some educated guesses of it because I was using the app and I caused it to crash. What can I do then, Zach?
So probably the most straightforward and probably most commonly used form of debugging is my favorite.
What's that?
It's print statements. Just print statements. Just like you're salting a nice steak just all over everything.
Yeah.
And I understand it's not the cleanest. It will clutter your code up. But, if you go back and clean them up later, everything's cool. But print statements help me see, this is what this variable was. Like, I just print out the value of a variable. I print out messages to myself I am in this function. And that is a way for me to more easily visualize the flow of my program.
Yeah.
Especially using things like closures and asynchronous programming where, and multi-threaded programming where not everything is happening in kind of a waterfall method.
Yep.
You're having things fire off at different times and come back at different times. So you can put your print statements there and literally just read in your console, okay, so this happened in this method first, then this method finished, then I went back to the original method, and then this happened, and kind of get an idea of how your program is actually performing when it's run.
Yeah, and you might be able to see through there. It's like, oh, I was expecting this to happen first. Oh, it didn't. This happened first. Oh, and that's why this variable didn't get set, or
exactly
this variable changed, or something like that.
Exactly. And yeah, I found that that happened. In fact, this happened to me earlier this week with closures. I was expecting, you know, I have my function and I have a closure in the middle of my function. And by the end of the closure, I was like, well, I want this variable to be set as what this thing was in this closure. And it wasn't happening. I threw a print statement down there and it was coming back as nil. And I was like, what? But it's finishing right here. So I threw some print statements in the closure, ran it. And that's when I saw my print statement from the bottom of the function printout. And then after that, my print statements from the closure printout.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, okay, now I understand why I'm not getting the expected results that I wanted.
And this is actually, I probably shouldn't admit this, but this is my most common form of debugging. Maybe it's because of just how I learned to program, how I'm very C-based. You know, I spent a lot of time working with C in an older language. And, you know, not great tooling. I didn't have breakpoints when I was working with C. At least I wasn't using an IDE that was good enough to have breakpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, throwing in print statements was always my solution.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, when I was teaching C, I would tell my students, yeah, just put a, yeah, when I didn't even know what they were doing, I'm helping them debug their code. I would tell them, just put a print statement above this and a print statement here, and that way I could see what was going on. And more often than not, it would make the answer obvious what the problem was.
Yes.
And so I still fall into those habits. And I'll put exactly like Zach does. I will put print statement that says, like, I got to here.
Yep.
And then the next print statement will be, and then I got to here.
Yes.
And that way I can see, like, which ones happen. Like, for instance, if something just sort of stops working or crashes, I want to know at what point does it crash. And there are other ways to do this, and we'll talk about that a little bit in breakpoints. This is, again, my most favorite way to debug. And one of the ways I could get around what Zach was saying about, having these print statements that get littered around your code and just pollute the whole code base is I'll have a one function called, like, log or something like that, like a global function called log. And then I'll use prints for all my debugging. And then later, when I search for print, I will remove all the print statements from my code because I know all the ones I actually want to keep in my code are called log. And the ones that I don't want to keep are called print. And within log, then I could care about my environment. Like, if it's production, don't even print it out.
Right.
If it's debug, print it out, so on and so forth. And you could really do some cool stuff. Like, you could even persist log statements. You could have them set to a server. But in my case, like, that's really to keep me on track of which print statements should I remove.
Right. And something else I'd like to add is, so what I do in my print statements, I'll add my name. I'll do, Zach, colon, and then my message.
Yeah.
Because in Xcode, you can filter off of text.
And that's right.
While your program's running, you're going to be generating a lot of other console messages that you don't care about. So I'll just type in Zach, and it'll bring up everything that I want to know.
Yeah.
So that's one way to kind of narrow it down.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's see. We've mentioned it a couple times. Breakpoints.
Breakpoints. Real quick, funny story.
Go for it.
This is how little I know about breakpoints and how much of a fan of print statements I was. Like you said, it's how you learned, right?
Yep.
Same for me. I graduated. I was looking for a job. One of my interviewers said, he was like, this is going to be a real easy interview. What is a breakpoint? And I was just like, what do you mean? what's a breakpoint? I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, well, did you ever have to debug? And I was like, oh, you mean print statements? And he was like, no, what, do you know what a breakpoint is? And I was like, no, can't say that I do. And he was like, oh, well, you just set it in your code and it stops it. And I was like, okay, sounds good. yeah, that's where I was when I graduated.
Yeah.
And that's how much is taught about breakpoints.
That's hilarious because, gosh, I'm trying to think when. No, I definitely use breakpoints in MATLAB. So, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, when somebody taught it to me. Because somebody had to have, right? Like,
right.
I honestly don't remember. But, like, I would do some complex stuff in MATLAB. Not, you know, electrical engineering.
Right.
We used MATLAB. That was our chosen language. At some point in time, it didn't do what I expected it to do, and somebody said, oh, yeah, you just put it into, like, breakpoint mode, or step-by-step mode. And,
right.
And then at some point in time, I was working with another language, probably Java or something like that, and I wanted to do the same thing. I was like, I can do it in MATLAB. Can't I do it in this language? And somebody told me about breakpoints and how you can click off to the side, and creates it. Yeah, so anyways, I somehow figured it out.
Right. So what is a breakpoint then? Since I didn't know for my interview, why don't you tell me? Since we haven't, like, and you don't have to formally define it.
Yeah. I don't know if I know the formal definition of a breakpoint, but to me, it's specifying a line of code for which when you are running that code in debug mode, it will execute the code up to that point and then stop. The whole program will pause, and then you could step through the code thereafter, at least on that thread. I don't know how it works with multi-threading, to be honest, but assuming it's one thread, you could step through every line of code thereafter and see the code execute as each line happens.
Right. I think that's perfect. I think you nailed it.
I hope so. we'll see. Somebody's gonna, you know, tell me later on Twitter that no, you got that completely wrong.
That's fine.
You're missing this part of it.
But that's, I think you get the, you know what? I'm gonna back you up. Coming from a guy who didn't know anything about breakpoints 2 years ago. Completely back you up.
Alright, cool.
So yeah, it's basically another way to not even debug, but just kind of slow your program down and step through it in a way where you're going one line of code at a time.
Yeah.
And as you go through that line of code, everything that's happening is kind of being printed out in a, well, not printed out, but it's in another window of Xcode.
Yeah, it's, most code is synchronous, right?
Yes.
And so you would be able to step through and basically say, just run this line of code. All right, what are the outputs? What is going on in the app right now?
Exactly.
And so, if you got the simulator hooked up or you have a device hooked up, like let's say it's you're changing UI elements, you could see when you changed it and what happens right afterwards. Actually, UI elements is probably a bad example because that never seems to work with breakpoints. But anyway, you're doing math and whatnot, you could see what variables equal at any given point in time.
Yes.
As you're stepping through the code.
Yes.
So it can be extremely, extremely valuable, particularly for complex formulas and algorithms. It can be not very useful. Like I said, I don't think it works very well with UI elements because a lot of that stuff happens on other threads.
Right.
So.
Right. And so you'll set one of these up by clicking over in the gutter where your line numbers are.
Is that what that's called? The gutter?
That's what I've heard it called. Click on a line number in the gutter. We'll call it the gutter. That's what we're going to call it from now on. That's what it's named.
The gutter.
The gutter.
Yeah.
In the gutter.
That sounds so terrible.
Yeah.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Put the line number. I'm there with the line numbers. I put the line numbers in the gutter. Click on it.
Yeah. Click on the line number.
Click on it. You'll see a little blue arrow pop up.
Yep.
And so your breakpoint is set. Once your code hits that line number, it'll pause.
This is something that took me a while to learn. When you click on the little arrow again, it turns transparent.
Yes.
Do you know how to get rid of them?
You right-click and delete.
Okay, so that's kind of a pain.
Yeah.
Did you know there's actually an easy way to get rid of those?
I know you can get rid of all of them at once.
You could get rid of them all at once, but let's say you didn't want to do that. So let's say you are accidentally clicking in, you know, the gutter, as we're now calling
it. What would you want to call it?
No, gutter's fine.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. anyways, so you accidentally click there. Yep. Happens to me all the time.
Me too.
I just want to get rid of that one breakpoint. You can click and drag that breakpoint away from where it was, and it'll disappear.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Like, I really wish somebody had taught that to me a long time ago, because I think even when I was working with Objective-C, like the entire time I was working with Objective-C, I didn't know you could do that. And so it was always like, I got to right-click on this and then hit delete.
Right, no. Because it's one of those things that right-clicking and hitting delete takes a second of your time, but if you do it 1,000 yep. times, you know, it adds yep. up.
Yeah, it's just annoying.
And like, not only that, it'll stop you from, you know, whatever cognitive process you were currently
in. And it was, like, so easy to create the breakpoint.
Yes.
It was such a pain to get rid of it.
Correct.
Yeah. Whereas, like, other languages, like in Android Studio, if you click to create a breakpoint, if you click on the breakpoint again, it just disappears.
Yes.
Whereas, like, in Xcode, you have breakpoints in multiple states. You've got active state, disabled state, and gone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay, I love that. Thank you for that. That helps me a bunch.
You're welcome.
That helps me a bunch.
Yeah. That really helped me. So continue with whatever you were talking about. I don't remember what it was.
So the gutter.
The gutter.
So no, you set your breakpoint. I mean, you pretty much just went over it for me. I was going to go through kind of disabling and deleting it.
Ha!
And you.
I win.
In fact, not only did you tell me how to not only did you talk about deleting it, you talked about it in a way that was better than I was going to.
Well, that's what we do here.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. So your code hits that breakpoint. Now what do you do?
So it stops, right? Your whole code stops.
Yes.
I'm trying to think. There's three or four things you can do, right? You could step to the next line of code.
Yes.
But there's some choices here with stepping to the next line of code.
Right.
If the line of code you're on is running a function, mm-hmm. you can choose to either step over that,
yes.
in which case it will just execute that function and go to the next line of code in the, the level or the context that you're in. Mm-hmm. Or you could choose to step into that function because you want to go into that function, into that scope, and run those lines of code.
Correct.
And so, yeah, if you say step into, now you'll no longer be on the, like, normally you were looking at you're looking at the lines of code that you were executing. As soon as you step into it, it will change pages. Like, let's say it's in a different class. It'll change, Xcode will go to that class, open that class in your view, and show you that line of code that it's about to run.
Right.
And then you could continue to step over or step into any of those lines of code.
Right.
If you choose to, there's also step out.
Yes.
So at any point in time, in order to run the next line of code, you can say step out. What it'll do is it will jump to the what happens after you leave this context.
Right.
So if you're in a function, you're like, okay, I'm halfway through this function. This is way deeper than I wanted to be. You say step out. It will finish running that function. Go to the next higher level context up, like whatever it's said to run that function, mm-hmm. and then go to the next line of code there.
Yes. Yeah. And that's basically it, right? Like if you step into a function enough, if you go down deep enough, you start seeing things that make no sense.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Right. You're getting to like Apple proprietary framework stuff and, you know, it's all compiled to binary and whatnot. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so that things look real foreign once you step down deep enough into your code.
I'm sure it means something to somebody.
It does. I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
Just not to me.
Not
to me, not when I'm debugging my own code.
Yeah. And another thing you could do is just hit play or run again.
That's the other option. Button. Yeah, yeah. There's a, once your program hits that breakpoint, you can hit play and it just will either go to the next breakpoint or complete it, whatever process it was doing.
Yeah, it'll just start running again, and then if you have another breakpoint, it'll stop at that other breakpoint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is a good way. Breakpoints are a good way to, you know, you can also check your variables and such. The issue I have with breakpoints and, you know, checking states is that mm-hmm. it's kind of like stack traces in that you get a lot of information.
Yeah, you do.
And digging through it to find the one thing you want can sometimes be a little tedious.
Yep.
And it's a lot to get through, which is one of the reasons why, like, if I want to see a variable, I'll do a print statement and just print out what that variable is at that moment, and I don't have to spend any time looking for it.
One of the you could do this with breakpoints too. So like if you hit a breakpoint and the whole program stops, you get a, I think it's called the debug console.
Yes.
And within the debug console, you can use the command PO, a space, and then you could type whatever variable you're curious about. Like I've got a variable called cat, and it's a class kitten. And it, you know, I want to know about its different properties and whatnot. So I can PO cat, and it will then print out what is available, you know, what's on that variable at that point in time.
Okay, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, it works most of the time.
And isn't putting a print statement in there still easier because it'll already be printed out for you?
Yeah, but kind of like doing this, it's like a one-shot deal. Like, okay, so I put a breakpoint because I know things are breaking around here. Run a few lines of code. I can't figure out what's going on. Print out cat. Run a few more lines of code. Print out cat again. Oh, I see something changed.
See.
It's got to be around here.
I see. Okay. That's...
So it's kind of like that.
That makes sense. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is... kind of like the print statements, except the print statements we were talking about are, like, earlier, is more like, it's compiled into the program. This is not.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to worry about dirtying up your code because you're not actually adding print statements. And it also can be, I don't want to recompile my entire code base again just to see this one line of, you know, code print out. I hit a breakpoint. You can set breakpoints while the program is running too, and then when it hits it, it'll stop. So, you just come out of the fly. It's like, okay, well, what if I put a breakpoint here and then ask what's going on here? You don't have to recompile it, which can take a little while sometimes. So that's kind of nice too.
Okay, that's cool.
One thing I found, and I'll bet there's a way to fix this. I'm pretty sure I know at least an idea of how to fix this. If you're using Core Data, this hardly ever works.
Oh, okay.
Because with the Core Data framework, there's some pre-compiling done and optimization that's done with Core Data and your models and all that. And so it's not quite running at the same time that your debugging is. And so if you ask, you know, what's going on with this model object, it may or may not give you back the right answer.
I see. Okay.
And I would say more often than not, it gives you back the wrong answer or it says it can't give you back the answer.
Right. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. So that's annoying, but I'm pretty sure you can, if you're using Core Data, there's some setting where you could turn off that optimization and everything goes slower, but now you can actually debug it. I don't remember how to do that.
Well, at least we know it exists. Possibly.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it exists, but It's a Google query away from doing it.
So. There you go. Google will get you what you want, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is best about breakpoints, the best feature of breakpoints, is being able to add actions to a breakpoint. This makes them incredibly powerful, and it's something that I don't know. I don't think exists in a lot of other IDEs. This is the first time in Xcode that I've come across this type of functionality with breakpoints.
Yeah, and you showed this to me, and this kind of blew my mind. And then I think I saw something later on Twitter that showed me even more things you could do with this. But I wouldn't even thought about it if you hadn't told me about this. So explain what you mean by that.
Sure.
By action.
So you've clicked in the gutter, right? We're there.
Yep.
You have your breakpoint set up. If you right-click on your breakpoint, there's this little option for edit breakpoint. So you click into that. And then it'll bring up a menu, and you'll be able to set a logical condition on the breakpoint. You can set how many times that breakpoint is ignored before stopping, which is incredibly useful if you have a breakpoint in a loop. Because that's one of the more annoying things about breakpoints. If you have one in a loop, it'll stop your program every time that loop is iterated through.
Yeah, that's true. Like that can be really annoying. Let's say you only want to know about the last time it runs in a loop, and you know the loop's going to run 100 times or something like that.
Right. So you say ignore it 99 times before stopping, and it'll skip over. You won't have to click that button 99 times, and it'll only give you that 100th.
I've got 99 problems,
but a breakpoint ain't one. I love it. Yes.
Very cool.
You can have it print out something to the console, so you can actually make your breakpoints print statements if you wanted to.
You could, yeah. A fun one I saw was, as an action, you can add a sound.
I love the sound, yes.
And so, like, yeah, if you wanted to just, like, anytime this certain thing happens, don't even stop the program, just you know, do a little chime or something like that, and then I get an idea that, oh, this thing happened.
Which is also fun when you put it in a loop.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
And that's exactly. And it's another way. So I'm looking at the menu right now, actually, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, there are 15-ish sounds you can have. So what that means is you can have, you know, 15 separate breakpoints. And I guess if your hearing is good enough, if you give each of those a different sound, you can hear which one hits first. I've never tried that. That sounds very ambitious. I don't know how well that would work out.
Probably not very well. But I mean, looking at this, like, you could do Apple Script, you could do shell commands. Yes. I'm sure in there you could do, like, take a screenshot, you know, things like that. And you could add multiple actions, so you could, like, play a ding and take a screenshot. And I mean, screenshot's not one of the automatic ones, but I'll bet you in either Apple Script or shell command you could do it. You could capture GPU frame, which actually maybe that. Oh gosh, because I mean, graphics processing unit frame. I'll bet you could turn that into a screenshot.
I bet you could.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe that's actually what that means, and they're just using weird. why don't they just call it screenshot?
Because it's more fun to say GPU. Capture GPU maybe frame.
Maybe it has more info on it.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Somebody please tell us. We would love to know. I kind of want to just like do this and like see what happens, but
maybe while we're not recording. And
yeah.
So that is what I think is the best feature of breakpoints, and that's one way to use them to really get the most out of what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and you could like have a whole bunch of breakpoints, and there's a little breakpoint symbol right above the console. And so if just like you want to have your breakpoints on or off, that'll toggle between disabling all your breakpoints or enabling all your breakpoints.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, kind of nice that you could just like, I don't feel like running any breakpoints right now. Make sure they're disabled.
Right. I just want to see what's going on with my app as I use the app itself, not what's going on in the code necessarily.
Yep. Although I've had breakpoints and they don't do anything. I'm like, oh, it's not breaking. Like, it's not even getting to this line of code. What's going on? And I realize I forgot that I had a disabled. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something to keep in mind.
Yeah, something to keep in mind. Don't do that.
Now, this is a breakpoint I learned about this week, and this has been incredibly useful. I'd like to shout out Norman from the Swift Coders community. So I was facing a problem where my app was running into an exception when it was loading a table view. I spent a couple of days on it. I couldn't figure it out. I had, you know, cell for row at, you know.
And when you say running to an exception, you mean full halt crash, right?
Yes.
But when it was crashing, it wasn't taking you to the line of code. You know, it was taking you to
the app delegate. Oh my God. I've seen, why does it take me to the app delegate? That is not and where I need to be.
And then the stack trace is practically unreadable.
If you Google what it gives you, there are so many cases where you can get the same stack trace because it was an array out of bounds, basically, is what it was giving me. And I'm like, okay, well, that can happen anywhere. And so I would try array out of bounds and then comma UI table view. Yeah. And that shortened it, but it was still a problem. So yeah. I looked throughout my code, couldn't find it. I was finally like, I was at my wit's end. I went onto the Swiftcoders Slack team and their questions channel, and I said, can anyone give me, you know, any sort of tip as to what's going on in my code? I'm trying to do this with the UI table view. I keep getting an array out of bounds exception. It takes me to the app delegate. That's not helpful. The stack trace is not helpful. Is there anything I can do to get more information? Norman came back and he said, have you tried an exception breakpoint? And I said, huh? What is this exception breakpoint? And so he told me how to enable it. And I believe it's in the debug menu. Possibly. I honestly don't remember right now.
I know it's in the breakpoint menu off to the side. What's that called? The left panel.
Yep.
The navigator. And so if you click on the top, there's like, you know, a whole bunch of symbols. One of them looks like a breakpoint. If you hit the plus button on the bottom, you can add an exception breakpoint.
That is it exactly. So you want to add an exception breakpoint, and this gives me the functionality, at least in my case, that I was talking about the stack trace does not give me earlier. I added this exception breakpoint. I had my bug figured out in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Broke, it took me exactly to the place in code where it was breaking. I read it and I thought, oh, of course, that will be nil at that point in time. Yeah. Yeah. What do you know? What do you know? So thank you, Norman, so much for telling me about that. You saved me so much time, and I wish I had asked earlier because it would have saved me a lot of headache.
So I remember learning this. It was in the Big Nerd Ranch book, iOS development Big Nerd Ranch book. It was back with the Objective-C one, so I don't know if they have it in the Swift one, but there was a whole chapter on debugging, and this was one of the things they told us to enable. And I think for like a year, I would always, like when I started a project, add this in and leave it there, leave it on. Because when you get those weird UI exceptions, you want it to stop where it fails, not give you that app delegate and an unreadable stack trace.
Right. Because crashing to the app delegate tells me nothing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely nothing. In fact, you know, the Big Nerd Ranch book does talk about this, but I forgot about it because it's, there's a lot to go through there, right?
Because you read the Big Nerd Ranch book, and then you go back and you do the project.
That's not, but
if you would do the projects at the same time as reading it, you would have known that you're supposed to enable this.
I did do this, though. I did. So page 173, if I had to guess, I would say page 173 of the iOS programming 6th edition would talk about adding an exception breakpoint, possibly figure 9.15. If I had to guess, that's where I would look first I wanted to find more information.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where I learned it. The one thing I will say, though, that there were times when I had to disable this breakpoint because it turns out those stack traces are sometimes useful. So sometimes the app would crash and it would take me to this breakpoint, and I would look at it and go, well, that shouldn't be failing there. I don't understand what's going on. I would turn it off, run it till it gave me the stack trace, and the combo of where it was breaking and what the stack trace said gave me a better idea of, gave me enough info to actually act on it.
Okay, I see.
So it's like a combo of the two.
Gotta join them together.
Yeah.
Basically do what Java does now, which is give you a stack trace and take you to where it is happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the stack trace actually does that, but I think it's encoded, or there's something weird about it that it's not obvious, and it definitely doesn't have a link to where the line.
And why encode that? Why?
Yeah,
that's the most useful information you can have. Right. This is where the problem is. Well, why don't we encode that and make them search a bit?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what Crashlytics does: is it decodes it and then shows you. Man. So. Yeah.
Wow. So, is there anything else? Have we debugged?
I'm sure there's a ton more, but that's about all my brain can think
How
of
much will right I now. Forget by the time I have to debug next?
That's a great question.
You know what? I will.
Know. I'm going right back to print statements.
I will never give up my print statements ever.
Yeah.
But I will also remember the exception breakpoint.
Ooh, one thing I want to say: if you are using print statements in Swift, the pound or hashtag symbol and the word function. If you print that out, we'll print out the function name. And same thing for line. Pound line will print out the line number. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to make a print statement that says that prints out the function that print statement is in and the line number, all you would do is the normal print in parentheses and in the quotes, the backslash, more parentheses, put in
the string interpolation.
Function. Yeah, exactly. Do the string interpolation thing with a pound function and then a space and then pound, then the string, thing there where you backslash parentheses, pound line, you will get the function and the line number where that print statement occurs. So you can copy and paste that throughout all your code and it will print out this function this line just ran. This function this line just ran. Mm-hmm. And so it is another way, instead of typing this just happened and then this happened and having to remember all those, you can use this and just reuse it throughout your code. You can even put it in error statements, which I do a lot.
Oh yeah, I do as well.
Yeah, and so when the error occurs and I log it, I can see in my logs that not only did this error occur, here is the line number in which it did occur.
Awesome.
And the function, yeah.
Okay. That's useful information to have.
Yeah, I figured that I should probably get that out there for people who like that kind of debugging. Otherwise, I think I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm out
but that's debugging that's it.
Ideas. Yeah, no more.
Cool. Well, I think we did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
And there's always more to learn about this. So.
Always more. And we are definitely open to learning more, too. So if you have any really cool debugging techniques, I know there are cool logging frameworks. Raghav uses something interesting.
I'm sure he does.
I don't even remember what it's called, but it's really pretty. In the logging the console, it has like different emoji colors, like the different hearts to give it a different color.
Really?
Yeah, so you know which level of log statement it is.
That's awesome.
Which is something that Android has with its base logger, mm-hmm. Or log function.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So you can create that in Swift if you'd like by adding different frameworks.
Cool.
I think that's all I can think of right now.
Excellent. Well, hopefully, our listeners can go out and maybe be a little more efficient with debugging. I know I will. this week has already taught me so much, so that'll probably cut down on a lot of development time where it's more of the frustrating kind of development and not the exciting kind of development.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and I think that's the goal of debugging is to cut down on the frustrating part of it, right?
Exactly. Like, you want to be building in functionality, not fixing functionality.
Yeah.
And so the if you can cut down on the time it takes to fix functionality so you can be building more functionality, then you're in a good spot.
Yeah, and I guess that leads into a discussion on test-driven development, which we don't have time for.
what?
But I promise you one of these days we will do an episode on test-driven development. I really love the concept, but if you're thinking of what can go wrong first and writing tests for it and then writing code to pass those tests, you might not even have to do a lot of the debugging stuff that we're doing.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, do you have any shout outs?
Yeah, I want to shout out that idiot Rebecca, who is a friend of mine.
What?
She told me to say that.
Are we just supposed to believe you?
Yes, okay. You're supposed to believe me.
Okay. Well,
really, she said that she would listen to the podcast if I gave her a shout out. So there we go.
All right. Well, Rebecca, I'm going to believe him until you come on the show to tell me different.
Because we have so many guests that come on.
Exactly.
The show, right?
So.
So you're never going to believe
exactly.
me. Are you?
Exactly.
All right. Anybody else?
Yeah, I would like to shout out Lucas Farah. He is the curator, or one of the curators, of Awesome iOS, which is a list of iOS, you know, frameworks and podcasts and anything having to do with the iOS ecosystem. He just basically has a list of all of the ones that he finds useful. And he reached out to us on Twitter through the Fireside Swift tag a few weeks ago, and he asked for a URL so we can be included in that list, which was really, it was really exciting for me.
That's a huge honor. I'm really thankful, that Lucas believes that we're actually valuable.
I know, right? That's amazing.
That he's willing to put us on that list, because looking at the different podcasts that he has on there, it's a pretty lofty group. So super
right. So thank
honored and humbled to be on that.
Thank
list.
You, Lucas, for finding us worthy to be on a list that contains, you know, Release Notes and iFreaks and a couple of the others that I actually have on my own phone.
Yeah, Under the Radar.
Under the Radar
there.
Consult. So it's suggest everybody go check it out. We're gonna put a link to Awesome iOS in our show notes, and maybe you can come across something else you like.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. As always, want to give a shout out to the Swift Coders Network of Podcasts, which is right now us, the Swift Coders Podcast, and the Learn Swift Podcast.
Yes, and they all went through their own issues this week. Garrick actually put up an interview he did on another podcast.
Yep. On U-Turn, correct?
Yes, because he did not have access due to Cass's outage to put up his own show.
And if I remember right, if this is the same podcast I listened to a while back, this is the host of U-Turn interviews Garrick about how he got started and whatever, you know, his story.
Yes.
And I found it incredibly fascinating.
I did as well. There's a lot in there that I did not know about him.
Yeah.
And so
same here. Same
makes
here.
Me makes me respect him all the more for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I suggest everybody go out and listen to that. It's a good one.
Yeah. All right, how can we reach you, Zach?
All right, you can reach me on Twitter. I am ZFalgu1. That's Z, F as in Frank, A-L-G-O-U-T, and the number 1. How about yourself?
I am on the Twitterverse as at SW Berard. That's B as in boy, E-R-A-R, D as in dog.
And do you know what our Twitter handle for the show is?
Probably.
This is a pop quiz, because normally I'm the one that gives it out. I just wanted to see if you...
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, you do all the work with it,
I wanted to see... No, what is it?
It is at @fireside_Swift.
Oh, you nailed it.
Yeah, I should probably know that, because I'm pretty sure I created it and then just, like, handed you the keys and didn't do anything with it.
Pretty
again.
Much. It's worked out well.
Yeah, so earlier before we record this podcast, I actually... I logged in as Fireside Swift, so now technically I could receive the alerts as well. Now the question is, will I be as active on it as Zach? I don't know. Zach is much better on Twitter than I am.
I don't know about that. Either that, or you're just setting the bar real low.
I mean, all I do on Twitter is really like puppies and kitties and other small cute animals that I see that make me
laugh. That makes Twitter so much better.
That's really all Twitter is for me. So I think it is in very capable hands with Zach. I don't know how much I will do with it, but at least I'll be able to see responses and answers.
You don't like me screenshotting everything and sending it to you?
No, that's great. That's great. It's just kind of filling up my phone. So,
Perfect. And everybody, please make me take more screenshots and send them to Steven. Let's see if we can crash his phone. So tweet us at @fireside_Swift. Let's do it.
Yeah, and of course, as always, like us on Overcast, and if you have the time, we love reading your reviews on iTunes. It really inspires us to keep going. As we've said before, we're not advertising on this podcast, at least not yet. This is what keeps us going. Like the fact that we're actually helping people out there is really inspiring to us, and that's why we do it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have for this week. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Y'all have a good one. Oh, oddly enough, ATP, that was the podcast I was listening to while mowing the lawn.
Oh, nice.
Like when I have,
You must have some powerful headphones.
Oh, I just blast it. I turn it all the way up. And we have an electric mower.
Oh, okay. So it's not as loud as a gas.
Yeah. Motor. I mean, it's loud, but it's not the chug of a gas motor. So
yeah, I'm used to the gas ones.
Yeah, no, those are real loud. So this one is really, it's just the electric motor, which isn't quiet, but it's about 50% of a gas mower, so I can listen.
You want a real workout while mowing the lawn?
No.
Get one of those manual mowers.
You know, I used to do that.
Yeah, so did I.
Yep. Before we moved up here, while we were still living in Beaumont for a year or two, uh-huh. I was like, I'll just mow this lawn, and we had a manual mower, or we didn't have a lawn mower, and I was like, I just want something cheap.
Yeah, so like, I want something $30.
Yes, I wanted something cheap that was easy to maintain. Like, I don't have to worry about putting gas, oil, none of that. Because I knew that if I had to do that, it would just break down anyway.
Yep.
And I was like, for the price of one of those, I can buy 20 of these.
Yep.
those are awful. I mean,
they're not the worst thing in the world, but yeah.
They're not the worst thing in the world. Of course, they're not the worst thing in the world, but they're they're not slavery, like, but they're pretty bad.
You're right. There are worse things in the world, like slavery.
Right, exactly.
That might be worse.
Yes, and so and then you have that blade just spinning in front of you.
Yeah.
And it's chewing up anything in its path.
Well, what's great is when it gets a stick in there, and like you got some like decent progress. You got it going, and
yeah, you just take the handle right to the diaphragm. Right.
Yeah,
and you're passed out on the lawn because you can't breathe.
Yep.
That's when you're thinking, okay, maybe I should have spent the extra money and gotten something that actually propels itself. The other thing is, if you use a manual push mower and you are lax about mowing your lawn like I am.
Yeah, then it gets thicker.
Then it gets really bad.
And you can't do it. Like, this is like, you have to do it. You have to go over like 3 or 4 times.
Yes, because you have to set it at like the largest gauge.
The highest setting, yeah.
Yeah, where there's enough room between that blade and the bottom, whatever it is that catches the grass so it can be cut.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yep.
So rough.
That's exactly me. When I first moved to California from New Mexico, I had a little lawn, so it wasn't like a big deal. I had it was just a front lawn. The backyard didn't have any grass. It was just dirt back there. Great landlords that I had.
Zeroscape.
Yeah, it was all Zeroscape. Dirt.
That's a feature.
Yeah, that was a feature. Yeah. Actually, I did kind of consider it a feature because I didn't want to take care of anything back there.
This is perfect.
So it's like, it had a little lawn in the front, and I was like, can we change that? And they weren't open to that. And so I bought a manual mower because, like, all right, I got to take care of this somehow. And
Oh, wow. We think a lot of, like, I know no other human being that has bought a manual mower outside of yourself.
It was not the greatest of ideas, but it was pretty much exactly your logic. And also on top of it, I was like, and it's a workout.
Yes.
This will be good.
Right? You rationalize it. Yes. You're like, no, this is definitely the right choice.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes in, you're cursing yourself. Yeah. The other thing is...
was awful.
Well, we had pecan trees in the front and backyard.
Okay, so, I mean, and it sounds like you had a much bigger lawn, too. So. Yes,
and so the pecan trees will drop, you know, the pecan.
Oh,
and so
okay, never mind. But, yours is worse. So much, much worse.
My options were either to be lazy, which, you know, start out lazy basically, which actually ends up adding more work, and just try to mulch as many pecans as possible, or to go through and actually pick up every single nut that was on the ground before I mowed.
Oh, so we had apple trees when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the apples would, you know, obviously, you know, fall off the tree, and we had dogs, so like it was my chore to mow the lawn, and so I'd have to pick up all the dog poop before I could mow the lawn, which I hate doing that.
Yes.
And also, you know, also like these apples would be there,
right?
So I mean, I also had to pick those up too,
right?
But because I was a kid, teenager around there, I got a little creative with my apple picking up. And
yes. I would love to hear how someone creatively picks up an apple.
So,
is there an interpretive dance?
No. It's really about like, okay, so when you pick up an apple, right, you put it in the plastic bag and you throw it away. You know, you get a big enough plastic bag, you throw it away.
Yes.
I had a lot more fun playing home run derby with these apples and a baseball bat.
Did you have neighbors?
So they would explode. So most of it would not get into my neighbor's yard, but
I would love to see them just sitting like in their living room and all of a sudden just boom, boom,
it was not end up
with apple all over their windows. Yeah.
Not, I mean, I wouldn't aim it towards houses. I would actually, this is maybe even worse. I would aim it towards the behind the backyard, which there was a street that ran there.
Perfect. Yeah. No, you wouldn't aim it at houses. That's no.
Yeah. No, I would aim it at the moving cars.
Yeah, aim it at the vehicles. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
I would also practice my golf swing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Were you big into sports, or was it just when it involved fruit?
I was not big into sports.
Okay.
But, I mean, but I like sports, and so it's not like I was practicing for, like, Little League or something like that. No.
That does sound like more fun,
though. Yeah, it was just way more fun than using the dog poop shovel to pick up the apples and put them in a bag until it was too heavy. And...
Right. For the record, I picked up zero pecans.
So you would just muscle through them with...
Yes.
Oh, yes. My God. That's going to break the lawnmower after a little while, right?
It didn't. This thing was a beast. Wow. It would just chew up everything. Either that or I just didn't care enough. Like, it probably did break it. But I was so busy, you know, chugging through everything anyway. I just, everything felt the same. Like a broken lawnmower compared to a working lawnmower, as long as that blade still spun, then I was mowing the lawn.
It is super satisfying when you get one of those things going, you hear it.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. It's, and there's also a fine line, like you have to calibrate your speed.
Yeah,
because if you start going too quickly, then you can just stop the blade just on grass. Period.
Really? I found that I when I got it fast enough, it was great because it would slice through anything. But sometimes I'd be moving too fast and miss grass because it would just kind of just go over it.
Yeah, no, mine. I guess I also don't know if the grass was thicker. And it would just grab everything, and then there was so much
getting
there.
Getting too much in the blades.
Yep. It wasn't enough to actually cut through it. Oh, those were fun days.
Those were the days.
So glad I'm not doing that anymore.
Good times.
And that's, I hired someone to take care of the lawn after that. Like, after a few years, I was like, enough, no more.
Yeah.
And there were things that I was just negligent of. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to pay somebody. They can take care of all of this, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. Two thumbs up.
Yeah, that's probably where I would end up if I had a house with grass, because I hate doing that chore so much.
And I was much happier after that.
Yeah.
So There you go.